My next guest is certainly one of the big legends in the world of pro wrestling. After all his years in the business with the events and the people that were a part of it, he's now put a story into a new book that even pro wrestling fans are going to love. But if you just want to hear about a story that looks at, along with pro wrestling, a story of family, of honor, of challenges, and the way people answer them and deal with them and survive them, that's in the book, too. It's Hitman, My Real Life in the Cartoon World of Pro Wrestling. We say good morning to Bret Hart. Good morning, Bret.
Good morning.
Great to have you here today. The you know, having gone through your book, and it's like I felt like I went through a Royal Rumble match with just the emotions that come through. But for you, what were the challenges in putting your life into this book? At what point was writing becoming more like a, I don't know, maybe almost an out of body experience for you, the way that you were telling all these stories?
It really affected me as I wrote it. It was different times that it was really, you know, it's funny how in the early days when you're not making any money and you're hurt yourself and you're going through maybe harsher times than I went through anywhere else, you seem like you're happier sometimes. And I know when I was writing about some of the early, my early years and the early parts of my wrestling career, it was fun to write about it to the point that I think I wrote too much. I mean, I ended up writing about 1,200 pages in this book originally and edited down to about almost 550. And it was, the whole thing was pretty much cathartic for me.
In case you don't know, that Bret was one of 12 children, and pro wrestling was the business your father, Stu, ran. It was called the Stampede Wrestling Promotion. Talk about what that promotion was all about, because for the newer fans, you give them a real good look at what I guess you'd call this old school wrestling was all about back then.
Well, I was lucky. I came from a place where, like, my dad had a lot of the great names of that ever put on a pair of wrestling boots worked for my dad at different points and different times. But eventually Calgary, as the dollar changed, and the Canadian dollar is quite strong in the 50s, and wrestling was quite popular in the 50s, and that shifted through the 60s and the 70s to tougher times. The dollar was much tougher, and you couldn't get American wrestlers to come up so much anymore, and my dad's wrestling company was really a perfect place to start out, because you always end up with a lot of old timers that were really usually pretty good guys, and probably in a lot of ways pretty old tough guys, like old salty guys, and you had a lot of young guys that were big strong kind of guys that were either football players or powerlifters and things like that wanted to get into wrestling. So you kind of meshed these two groups of people together, not to mention the fact that you had this huge variety of, like, Mexican wrestlers, Puerto Rican wrestlers, Japanese wrestlers, Australian wrestlers, all these different variety of wrestlers with different moves. So as a little kid watching all this growing up and seeing the champions come into town periodically, the world champion and things like that, I was really gifted in the sense that I really got, I think, a superior education in wrestling than most kids. And I've always said that the second generation wrestlers, the ones that grew up with it, I don't know that sometimes that we had any choice getting into it. It was like wrestling was always the calling that was waiting for us, I think, and guys like me and Kurt Hennig and so many of the wrestlers that their fathers brought them into it.
Right, the Orton family.
There was the Ortons, the Von Erichs. There's a lot of, even the Rougeaus up in Montreal. There was always a lot of families that there was a sort of honor that went with the business, and I'm sure they grew up the same way I did, where you're defending it and somehow you're sort of tied in with it all, even at a very young age.
I mentioned in the introduction how even a non-wrestling fan will gain a lot of things from your book, and one of those is the way that, and this might be a foreign concept to the people in today's working world, whatever their business is, but back in your early days, there were some veterans who were more than willing to teach you and show you the right way to do things.
Well, wrestling is a complicated profession in the sense that a lot of people don't, and it's always been a business where you had to adapt all the time and just always go from one point to another where you just you're relying on what you see and watching it all the time.
On top of that, with the just the trust and the honor that you have to have for each other when you're doing what you're doing.
Yeah, I always one thing I learned when I got into wrestling was the most important thing was to protect the guy you were working with. It wasn't about hurting anybody. It was about wrestling. I think I said it in my book that it was sometimes it's a lot more like figure skating than it is anything else. It's two people working together to tell a story, and I was lucky, I think, in the sense that I watched some really great wrestlers tell stories, and I really did maybe have an understanding of how to build a match better than I think a lot of wrestlers. Maybe as Vince McMahon said in my DVD that he did a few years ago, I was the greatest storyteller in wrestling. I don't know for sure what my strongest point in wrestling was, but it probably was that I could create pretty good stories.
Plus,
I think all that came from being a fan first.
Well, plus the fact, too, being a fan of yours for all the years, the fan would know that you're telling the story, but you didn't make it look like you're telling the story. You just made it look like this is what was just happening.
I tried not to be very... A lot of these books you see come out, they take shots at people, and they're kind of vindictive. If I've taken any shots in there, they were quite measured. They weren't... I think I said what I needed to say, but I didn't try to lash out and take shots at people. That's not what the purpose of my book was. What I really wanted to do was write a book and put people in my shoes right from the time I was small and understand how important, I think, to me it all sort of seemed to be. I grew up with it. I defended it. When people say to me that when the very end of my career, when I had all my problems with Vince McMahon, when I knocked him out and all that, I don't think when someone speaks about it today, they don't understand the background and the whole story behind it.
We're talking with one of the greats, Bret Hart, with his new book, Hitman, My Real Life in the Cartoon World of Wrestling. BretHart.com is where he is on the web. Coming up on Friday the 10th, the Borders Books on Broadway in New York City on the 11th at 11 a.m. Bookends in Ridgewood on East Ridgewood Avenue. Later on the 11th at 4 p.m. at Borders in Bridgewater. And on the 12th of October at 2 p.m. at the Ocean County Library in Toms River. And that's just a little piece of the tour. I mean, when you go to BretHart.com, you look at the tour that you're on. I mean, your publisher's running you rougher than Vince McMahon ever did on the road.
Well, I don't know about that. That'll take some doing. But
yeah.
I'm really looking forward to the book tour. In a lot of ways, I'm not sure some of the places I'll get to might be the last time I get back there, or maybe might be the first time in a little while that I get back to some places like Dallas and places like that. But New York is always my my favorite memory of wrestling. I always loved wrestling in Madison Square Garden. It'll be great to be back in New York again.
I want to do some quick points here. I mean, there's the obvious that you know as a fan that Bret goes into details. He fills in some of the Vince McMahon background, which gives you an insight to what that individual is all about. One thing that struck me reading your book, though, you talk about, and you're very upfront about the steroid and drug use in pro wrestling before the cleanup, or some would argue maybe even the alleged cleanup, depending on which promotion you're talking about. The way you wrote it was you didn't make it sound like this was a shock to you, the use of drugs and steroids in wrestling. I mean, was it that well known? Were you that easily a participant, or did you have to do it just to keep up?
I saw it as steroids became a if you wanted to be competitive with all the other wrestlers that were the top guys that were getting the big push kind of thing, where the guys that had the good bodies. Vince encouraged you to have a good body. I'll never say that he ever told me or encouraged me to do steroids, because he never did. No one ever brought it up. But I think it was like probably in a lot of sports where it was around. And it was definitely an enhancement. It made a big difference. And I never would have taken a steroid if I didn't need to. I believe that I wouldn't be talking to you today that if I hadn't taken the steroids that I did for the period that I did. But I think that it was critical for everybody to basically take them, and I think they were, for me in my case, I took them under the strong belief that they were a muscle builder, and they were. They did help me a lot, and probably in some ways saved my career for a little while there. But I also learned through that whole process that that you don't need them, and that a lot of that was more in your head. I mean, they do give you an advantage, but I don't think that much of an advantage that it's worth taking them. And I try to tell people when I write my book that it's not. I don't try to promote. Like I'm not trying to make a big statement about steroids. But I know that I had limited use with them, and I took them for a period of time. And when they started the drug testing in the early 90s with the WWE or WWF back then, you know, I followed it to the and I thought it was I thought it worked. Like, I thought the drug testing policy, which to the best of my understanding, that for all the testing that I did, you know, it was always legitimate. There was always somebody there watching you and stuff like that. I know lots of guys probably did cheat, and there were lots of maneuvers made by different guys to distract somebody, or slam a door and have somebody turn a head so that somebody could switch something and things like that. But that somebody, one guy or two guys, might get away with that. The whole crew of wrestlers aren't going to get away with that every night, and that wasn't the case. There was a drug testing policy, and it proved itself in the 90s that they didn't need steroids, and they weren't necessary. But it was later, in the late 90s, that they sort of threw that out and said, do whatever you want. You can take all the steroids you want. We're not going to be anybody's policeman anymore. And I think they're probably having regrets today that they did that.
We're hearing that not just on the wrestling websites now, too. Another part of your story that you're very open with, I mean, just on the 9-to-5 person that's working a job, they have a tough enough time building and keeping a family. But man, oh man, I mean, the challenge you face doing what you're doing for a career, and you're looking for a life, and you're trying to build a family, you have kids, just to build it and keep the connection, keep it together, you've shown how much of a challenge it could be, and you know, it looks like your kids are turning out okay.
Well, knock on wood, I hope they are anyway. I think it was tough. That was probably always was the toughest part of the job, was you know, being having this sort of life for everyone else. Like, I mean, I worked Christmas Day, I worked Easter, I worked Halloween night, I worked birthday parties. Sometimes I can remember one time I brought one of my sons down to New York somewhere, and I ended up having to take him to, I had to go to somebody else's house for a party. WWF had hired me out to go to somebody's birthday, and I ended up taking my son to somebody else's birthday party, and it felt really strange for me to be at another kid's birthday party when I'm never at my own, and have my own kid sort of on a holiday with me, having to go to another kid's party. But it was things that you just made these sacrifices all the time, too, because that was your job.
And you know, granted, the money was good, but you think back, I guess, in hindsight, what were or what maybe still are the consequences. With Bret's book, we're wrapping up here with Bret Hart, and I'll give you a rundown, too, of his area appearances in just a minute. You run down a lot of the stories that even the casual fans know, with your brother Owen in particular. You know, not to spotlight or maybe do an unfair comparison, but when you look at Owen's life and his career, if someone wanted a fingerprint of what wrestling at maybe at its most lowest or maybe most challenging, maybe even the most damaging could be, could you look at Owen's life and say, yeah, that's probably pretty much where you don't want to go?
Well, I think there's been some horrible things that happened in wrestling last. My brother Owen being one of them.
Sure.
And, Chris Benoit being the other. But, you know, those are isolated things that no one, I don't think, could have foreseen them happening. I still don't know what Owen was thinking when he did all that stuff. But I think Owen was such a good man, you know, and I think even today people still remember him for being this really good man, like a good soul, and I think everybody loved him, and it's a tragedy that what happened with him.
Fan or no fan, you are going to get a lot of great stories, a few, and some life lessons along the way, too. Let me give you the rundown of Bret's area schedule. On Friday the 10th, 1 p.m. at Borders Books at 100 Broadway in New York City. On the 11th at 11 a.m., bookends on East Ridgewood Avenue in Ridgewood, New Jersey. Later on the 11th at 4 p.m., at the Borders in Bridgewater, New Jersey. Then on Sunday the 12th at 2 p.m. at the Ocean County Library in Toms River. If you're listening on the stream outside of New Jersey, you can go over to his website, bretthart.com. Get a full rundown of his schedule to find out what one of the best ever is coming to your area with one of the best books that you're ever going to want to read, because it's coming from the heart and it's all honest, it's all up front, doesn't pull any punches, and gives you a lot of insight to, we all like the backstage looks, and it's not just that in wrestling, but he tells you a lot about what was happening behind the doors of the Hart House as well. Bret Hart, thanks so much for the story you tell and for being here this morning.